Hello and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, June 3rd, 2020. I am your reader, Ike Rayford. First, we will start with our weather. Today, we are partly sunny with a high of 86. Winds are slight out of the southeast, 4 to 8 miles per hour. And then tonight, we're looking at some thunderstorms in the area and this evening with a low of 62. Some slight winds there as well. Thursday, sunshine with a strong thunderstorm, a high of 88 and a low of 65. A little bit stronger winds at 7 to 14 miles per hour from the south-southeast. And on Friday, partly sunny, some wind, a high for 84 and a low of 64. And then on Saturday, we have a high of 86 with a low of 73, so very hot day. A strong thunderstorm in the afternoon. The winds will pick up and they are going to be 10 to 20 miles per hour out of the southeast. And on Sunday, to round out the week, windy and humid with clouds and sun, 88 for a high, 70 for a low, winds out of the south at 15 to 25 miles per hour. Our mini editorial today comes from Don Stevens of Sioux City. And Don says, "What a crazy world. We arrest people for not social distancing. We fine people for opening hair salons ahead of schedule. We do not open churches to pray, but we do not arrest violent protesters for gathering in mass, not social distancing, and burning police stations to the ground. Explain the logic to we stupid people." Again, that's from Don Stevens of Sioux City. Our first story is from Brett Hayworth of the Sioux City Journal. Feenstra dethrones King. There are pictures of the candidates, Randy Feenstra, Steve King, Jeremy Taylor, Brett Richards, and Steve Reeder. And as of press time for the newspaper, Randy Feenstra had 45.6%, Steve King 36%, Jeremy Taylor 7.8%, Brett Richards 7.5%, and Steve Reeder was 3.5%. Sioux City. Steve King had never lost a race in his 24-year political career until Tuesday night. Fellow Republican Randy Feenstra pulled off a stunning upset of King, a conservative firebrand who honed a national reputation for a series of incendiary comments on race, immigration during his 9 terms in the U.S. House. Feenstra, a state senator from Hull, beat King 45.6 to 36% in the GOP primary for Iowa's 4th district with 96% of the vote in, according to the Associated Press, which called the race for Feenstra at 11 p.m. In his first interview with Iowa media, Feenstra told the Journal that lining up support from grassroots conservatives over 17 months sealed the win and capitulated him to a solid foundation prior to the spread of the novel coronavirus halted in-person campaigning in March. "At the end of the day, Iowa deserves a proven, effective congressman," he said. Feenstra also described having a phone conversation prior to 10:30 p.m. with House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. "He just said, hey, go out and win in November," Feenstra said. A 3-term state senator and former businessman from Hull, Feenstra advances to the November general election to face Democrat J.D. Scholten, a Sioux Cityan who narrowly lost him to King in 2018 and was unopposed in Tuesday's primary. 3 other GOP challengers, Steve Reeder, split about 18% of the vote on Tuesday. Early voting by mail factored heavily in the outcome as the Iowa Secretary of State office sent out ballot request forms to all registered voters to reduce in-person voting during spread of the coronavirus. Feenstra ruled in his home county of Sioux County, where he had a 4,436 vote margin over King, taking 82%. Feenstra in Woodbury, the largest county in the 4th district, Feenstra got 38% to King's 34%, while Taylor had just 18% in his home county. The high-profile 4th district race, watched closely nationally, was widely seen as a referendum on King's effectiveness in the House after GOP leaders last year removed him from all his committees in the wake of published comments in which he questioned when terms like white supremacist and white national became offensive. Feenstra and his allies heavily outspent the field, arguing that King had lost his clout in Congress and it was time for a change. Feenstra was endorsed by abortion rights opposition group National Right to Life, once a longtime King supporter on the U.S. and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the nation's largest business lobbying group, and also picked up support from prominent Republican leaders, including former Governor Terry Branstad and evangelical leader Bob Vanderplas. King's paltry fundraising kept him from airing TV ads. Heading into the primary, King was seen as vulnerable after only winning re-election by 3% in 2018 to Shulton, a political newcomer. 2 months later, in a New York Times story on immigration, King was quoted as asking, and white nationalists, white supremacists, Western civilization, how did the language become offensive? Why did I sit in classes teaching me about the merits of our history and our civilization? The published remarks fueled a national backlash that prompted GOP House leaders to strip him of his committee assignments, including agriculture, a key spot for the largely rural 4th District. The full House also passed a resolution condemning white supremacy and white nationalism. Since then, King has repeatedly insisted the Times reporter misquoted him, and the Republican leaders were too skittish over the fallout to reinstate him to his committees. King took to the House floor in January 2020 to again criticize McCarthy, describing his treatment by the GOP leader as unprecedented. King had run for office 10 prior times for a state Senate seat in 1996 and 9 times for Iowa congressional seats and won all 10 positions. King had faced primaries in 2018 when he got 75% of the vote and 2016 when he defeated Republican Rick Bertrand, who at the time was a state senator from Sioux City. King got 65% of the vote that year, so he's fallen far from where he stood in those primaries. Bertrand on Tuesday said both King and Feenstra are honorable men, but like many Republicans in the 4th District, we are tired of the political impotence that Congressman King now represents. We are Iowans and we like a little pork every once in a while. As of June 1, there were 198,289 Iowans living in the 4th Congressional District who had active Republican voting registrations. As of Tuesday morning, those Republicans had requested 70,890 early ballots and 59,752 had been returned. And more political news this morning from Nick Heitrich of Sioux City of the Journal. Sheehan wins GOP nomination for Woodbury County Sheriff, and this is in Sioux City as well. Woodbury County Republicans decided to go outside the sheriff's office to choose their nominee for the position. Former Sioux City Police Officer Chad Sheehan received 60% of the vote in Tuesday's primary election, defeating Sheriff Major Todd Wick, a 30-year veteran of the department, 6,298 to 4,097. Results are unofficial. With no Democrat filing for the office, Sheehan appears to be in line to succeed Sheriff Dave Drew, who is not seeking re-election. Sheehan said he did not know what to expect heading into Election Day, and the decisive margin of victory was humbling. I felt like we had done a lot in the campaign to set us up for success, said Sheehan, 47, who retired from the Sioux City Police Department and is president of Sheehan Strategic Solutions, a consulting company that provides training to survive active shooter incidents and workplace violence. He said he will bring a fresh perspective to the office. I think a lot of people know I have a lot of new ideas and a clear vision of taking the sheriff's office to the next level. I think that resonated with the citizens, he said. Overall, voting in Woodbury County was high, helped by the return of 13,219 absentee ballots, the result of a statewide push for voters to cast their ballots early by mail in an effort to protect election workers from being exposed to the novel coronavirus. As a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, Woodbury County Auditor and Election Commissioner Pat Gill opened only 5 of the usual 44 polling precincts. He said lines were steady at sites in Sergeant Bluff and long lines Family Rec Center in Sioux City. Gill said 3 people in line to vote at Riverside Elementary School in Sioux City left without casting a ballot after a voter became upset and refused to comply with poll workers' request to wear a mask as a precaution against spreading the coronavirus. The guy was challenging other folks for wearing masks. He was pretty adamant about it, said Gill, who wasn't present but received a report from poll workers. The Woodbury County Courthouse, normally open on election night for candidates, citizens, and media to watch the posting of election results, was closed to ensure the security of election voters as they proceed to the ballot tallies. County officials were concerned after protesters rallying for equal treatment of minorities by police in the wake of George Floyd's death in Minneapolis had gathered the 2 previous nights outside the Sioux City Police headquarters a block away. Police arrested 13 people early Monday morning after protesters threw rocks at officers. A protest on Monday night did not result in the arrest. Tyson Foods' 591 workers at Storm Lake Pork Plant test positive for COVID-19. And this is from Dolly A. Butts of the Journal and out of Storm Lake. Tyson Foods announced Tuesday that 591 of the workers at its Storm Lake Pork Processing Plant have tested positive for the novel coronavirus. That's a quarter of the 2,303 workers who worked at the facility and were tested for COVID-19. Tyson said in a statement that more than 75% of the workers who tested positive didn't show any symptoms and otherwise wouldn't be identified. Our top priority is the health and safety of our team members, and we continue to take strong actions to ensure they feel protected in their community and when they come to work. Tom Brower, Senior Vice President of Health and Safety for Tyson Foods, said in the statement. As in Storm Lake, we are routinely finding high levels as of asymptomatic positives when we test widely at our plants. And because of that, we can do a public service by sharing the results with the local community. 58 of the workers were tested by the health department or when seeking care through their own healthcare providers, and an additional 533 were tested on site from May 18 to May 21, according to the statement. The vast majority of the plant's workers reside in Buena Vista County, which had 854 total cases of the virus as of 7 p.m. Tuesday, an increase of 44 from Monday, and also reported its first COVID-19 related death. If all of the workers who tested positive lived in Buena Vista County, they would account for roughly 70% of the Northwest Iowa County's total cases. We are thankful for the efforts of Tyson Foods management and team members to ensure the safety of employees as they continue in the best manner possible to process food for our country. Carrie Navratil, Storm Lake City Manager, said in the statement, "We know that the efforts to protect Tyson team members also protect their families and in turn our other residents." According to the statement, workers who test positive receive paid leave and may return to work only when they have met the criteria established by both the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and Tyson. Tyson said in a statement that 186 of the workers who tested positive have been through their required absence and have now returned to work. Tyson is expected to resume limited production at the Storm Lake plant on Wednesday following a temporary halt for deep cleaning and sanitizing. Siouxland District Health Department attributed two more deaths to COVID-19 in Woodbury County Tuesday, increasing the county's death total to 36. Dakota County reported one death, raising its total to 26. And one final story for the front page. Greenfield wins Democratic nod. Sioux City and Mike Franken loses his U.S. Senate bid. And this is from the Journal Des Moines branch, James Q. Lynch reporting. Des Moines businesswoman Teresa Greenfield crushed three rivals Tuesday night for the Democratic U.S. Senate nomination, setting up a challenge to first-term Senate Joni Ernst's re-election bid. Backed by Washington, D.C., Democrats and their allies, Greenfield early won a primary election that saw record absentee voting fueled by the coronavirus pandemic. Unofficial results showed her winning about 47% of the vote. In efforts to keep voters and poll workers safe, candidates and elections officials encouraged mail-in voting. As of Tuesday morning, 396,495 people had cast absentee ballots. That's more than the 207,596 who voted in 2016 and the 289,852 in 2018. Heavy turnout showed Iowans are hungry for change, Greenfield said in a victory speech delivered from her Des Moines home. This moment calls for new leadership with compassion and grit. And that has defined Iowans, said Greenfield, who promised to be a new voice in the U.S. Senate. Greenfield, 56, went straight to work on Ernst, criticizing the senator on political corruption, agriculture policy, union rights, social security, and health care. "This is my promise to you. I'll never forget who I am, where I'm from, and who I'm fighting for," she said. "Tonight we celebrate, but tomorrow we get back to work because, you know what, we have a job that needs to be done." Ernst, 49, who was unopposed in the primary, talked about her sense of service that drove her to put in 23 years in the Army Reserves and Iowa National Guard and led her to the Senate. "In Iowa," she said, "we serve each other. We work together as a team, and we serve our community." She noted that President Donald Trump has called her relentless in her efforts on behalf of Iowans and promised to continue to be your relentless fighter in the United States Senate. The primary campaign was far from typical, Candidates avoided handshaking and door knocking in favor of virtual events. At in-person forums, candidates were separated by distance and plexiglass shields. As the nominee, Greenfield, who benefited from about $8 million in outside spending, will have all the resources of the party and its allies in her attempt to win what had been considered a safe GOP seat. Ernst, then a state senator from Red Oak, flipped the seat from blue to red when Senator Tom Harkin did not seek re-election in 2014. After defeating four rivals for the nomination, Ernst rode past U.S. Rep. Bruce Braley by about 90,000 votes. However, her popularity has fallen to 37% in recent polling. The nonpartisan Cook Political Report has downgraded the race from safe Republican to tilt Republican and said there is an opening for a Democrat. Still, Senate races overwhelmingly favor the incumbent, according to OpenSecrets.org. It's rare that voters return less than 80% of incumbent senators to the $174,000 a year job. Democratic hopes to flip the seat have been buoyed by the party's gain in voter registration. Democrats now outnumber Republicans on Iowa voter rolls. The monthly voter registration numbers from the Secretary of State on June 1 showed there are more Democrats than no party voters, which had been the largest block since at least 2000. The monthly report showed 674,456 Democrats to 669,503 Republicans and 639,833 no party voters. Greenfield built herself as a scrappy farm kid. She emphasized her rural roots, overcoming tragedy when her husband died in a workplace accident, and her refusal to accept contributions from corporate political action committees. She was endorsed by establishment Democrats, including Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, as well as Emily's List and N Citizens United. She contrasted her refusal to take one dime of funding from corporate political action committees with Ernst receiving $1.9 million for those groups and supports banning corporate PAC funds and dark money funding. She said she believes health care is a right, not a privilege, and wants to strengthen the Affordable Care Act, creating a public option, and lower the overall cost of health care, including co-pays and prescription drugs. Greenfield, 56, also talked about the crisis in rural Iowa of reckless trade policies. She also called for more gun regulation, expanding background checks, researching gun violence, prohibiting gun ownership by domestic abusers, and people on the Transportation Security Administration's no-fly list. The runner-up in the race with a quarter of the votes was Michael Franken, a retired three-star admiral who emphasized his broad experience as qualifications for the Senate. He was chief of legislative affairs for the Navy, worked for years in the policymaking, strategy, and planning, and oversaw authorization of a $150 billion budget. Although never elected to office, Franken claims more legislative experience than Ernst. Iowans will not be rewarded by sending another amateur to the Senate, he said. Kimberly Graham, who finished with about 15% of the vote, spoke of the impact outside spending. It looks as though $10 million is pretty uphill to overcome, Graham told campaign staff and volunteers during an election night video conference call. She said $10 million was spent on advertising on the primary in the last month. It's really, really tough to overcome that. Although not the nominee, she said the race was about moving the cause of justice forward. Des Moines business owner Eddie Morrow was fourth with 11%. The people have voted, Morrow said in his concession. While the outcome is not what we sought, we did carry a message of hope and progress that I'm incredibly proud of. Former Des Moines television reporter Cal Woods also was on the ballot, but he withdrew from the race and endorsed Franken. Republicans also noticed the price tag on the primary race. Teresa Greenfield showed Iowans what $10 million in outside spending and help from D.C. Democrats will get you. A desperate, dishonest win from a campaign run by coastal elitist liberals, Republican Party of Iowa Chairman Jeff Kaufman said. After a year of dodging Iowans, D.C. Democrats poured millions of dollars into the state to influence the election and buy Greenfield the nomination. The reality is, even Democrats know Greenfield is untruthful and woefully unprepared to lead. Iowa Democratic Party Chairman Mark Smith countered that when it comes to strengthening health care and workers' rights, protecting Social Security and the farm economy, there are urgent jobs need doing in Washington, and Ernst's broken promises aren't getting them done. But on November 3rd, Iowans will send a scrappy farm kid to the U.S. Senate who will, Smith said. Lee Des Moines Bureau reporter Aaron Murphy contributed to this story. The online poll, today's question is, did you vote in the Iowa or South Dakota primary? Yesterday's poll was, which of these activities is your favorite way to spend time at home? Reading a book, watching television, watching a movie, listening to music. There was 44 votes, and the winner is watching television by 50%. 30% said reading a book, 13% said listening to music, and 7% said watching a movie. If you would like to speak out, the question is, what do you think about the city of Sioux City considering implementing a mandatory curfew in response to late night protests? You can sound off at www.facebook.com/Sioux City Journal. Our opinion page, there's few letters to the editor. First one is from Steve Huggins of Akron, Iowa. What about life of fallen officer? George Floyd's life mattered. This isn't up for debate. But Dave Patrick Underwood's life didn't. Apparently not. You don't see anyone mourning his life or protesting, rioting over his murder at the hands of rioters. So tell me, why doesn't Dave Patrick Underwood's life matter? Again, that's from Steve Huggins of Akron, Iowa. The next one, recreate responsibly. People are enjoying time on the water, and that's a good thing, especially during the pandemic. When you're out, please remember to take 3 easy steps to prevent spreading invasive species. This area has some of the best recreational opportunities in the nation. To protect it from this and future generations, always clean, drain, and dry your equipment every time you come off the water. Invasive species such as zebra mussels, Asian carp, and a multitude of plants can be easily and inadvertently transferred between water bodies. They can travel in a small amount of water left in a vessel, in unused bait, or on a fragment hanging from a boat or trailer. Invasive species disrupt the health of our waters and impact all water uses. The coronavirus shut down the Isaac Walton League's Invasive Species Awareness event this year, but you still need to do your part to prevent spreading invaders. Take a few minutes, pull your plugs, and complete all the steps to ensure you're not moving an unwanted species to another area. Protecting the health of our waters and recreational opportunities is up to you. And that's from Paul Lepisto of the Isaac Walton League of America member here, South Dakota. And our last one is from Craig Levine of Sioux City. Drastic change is needed. On the surface, the Paycheck Protection Program, PPP, is exactly what the country needs right now. A solution to keep the country small and independent businesses open. But in reality, PPP is being used by executives to repay debts to big banks and private equity firms. Meanwhile, across the country, thousands of small businesses, businesses with workers who need paychecks to survive, are still waiting on their loans after being approved for the program. The failure of PPP exposes how lawmakers in Washington, D.C. really feel about our country's small businesses. Congress needs to make drastic changes in the next round of funding, or PPP will have failed those it set out to save. And those are the letters to the editor. And as always, if you would like to share your opinion, the journal welcomes and encourages reader feedback. Letters to the editor must be no longer than 250 words and will be edited for length. Please include your name, hometown, and daytime telephone number for verification. Phone numbers will not be printed. We will not publish anonymous letters or open letters or letters to a third party. We will publish no more than 2 letters and 2 mini editorials per writer at month. Letters, mini editorials, and guest opinions may be published or distributed in print, electronic, or other form. Our quote for the day is from Morgan Freeman, American actor. He says, learning how to be still, to really be still and let life happen, that stillness becomes from a radiance. A couple of other stories of local interest, and this story is from Dolly A. Butts of the Journal. In Sioux City, Planned Parenthood North Central States to reopen limited services in Sioux City. Planned Parenthood North Central States is bringing back limited in-person services to Sioux City beginning Wednesday. Planned Parenthood North Central States said in a statement released late Monday that its Sioux City Health Center, 4409 Stone Avenue, will offer STI testing and family planning services, including birth control, IUD consultations, depot shots, and more. Medication abortion care will also be available, according to the statement. Planned Parenthood of the Heartland Sioux City Clinic shuttered its doors on June 30, 2017, after Iowans' Republican-controlled legislature approved $3 million in Medicaid funding cuts, which then-Governor Terry Branstad signed into law before leaving office. The clinic served more than 2,300 patients in 2016. The closure of the clinic, as well as Planned Parenthood of Heartland Clinic in Burlington, Keokuk, and Bredendorf, often came at a time when sexually transmitted diseases were surging in the state. Sexual and reproduction health care needs don't stop during a pandemic, and Iowans in the Sioux City area need these services especially now. New data shows sexually transmitted infections are skyrocketing in the county as the availability of testing and treatment has gone down. Erin Davidson Rippey, Iowa State Executive Director for Planned Parenthood North Central States, said in the statement, "To limit the spread of COVID-19, the statement said patients have access to telehealth services, which launched at the beginning of the pandemic. Planned Parenthood health centers are taking all necessary measures to protect patients and physicians when in person care is necessary." According to the statement, health centers have a universal in-clinic masking policy, require social distancing, and limit in-person contact only when necessary. Appointments can be made by calling 877-811-7526. Report recommends Anawatine be tried for murder as adult. And this is from Nick Heidert and out of Anawa, Iowa. A juvenile court officer's report recommends that J. Lee Nobaum's murder and sex abuse case remain in the district court rather than be transferred to juvenile court. The report doubts the reasonable prospect that Nobaum, 17, could be rehabilitated in the short amount of time juvenile court services would have jurisdiction over his case. If Nobaum were adjudicated in juvenile court, the court supervision would be limited to 18 months past his 18th birthday. Newborn turns 18 on December 21st. Assistant Iowa Attorney General Monty Platts told District Judge Dwayne Hoffmeyer during a hearing Tuesday that he need only to look at the report to decide Newbaum's case remain in Monona County District Court, where he is charged with the shooting death of a Mapleton, Iowa teenager and the sexual assault of 7 girls. They have made it clear that 18 months is nowhere near enough to rehabilitate juvenile, Platts said of the juvenile court's report. Public defender Lori Lau, who had requested the transfer of Nubon's case to juvenile court, said the Anawatine has begun counseling and treatment since its release from custody in April, and other juvenile court programs could benefit him. He could be properly rehabilitated well within the majority time limit, Lowell said. Hoffman said he hoped to file a ruling by the end of next week. Nobaum is scheduled to stand trial in August for first-degree murder for the January 31st shooting death of 16-year-old Joseph Hopkins in Mapleton, according to court documents. Nobaum became angry with Hopkins because he and another teen would not stop playing with an unloaded shotgun, then retrieved a loaded shotgun from the demolition derby car on which they were working and fired a single shot, striking Hopkins in the head. Nobaum is to be arraigned June 15th on 10 counts of third-degree sexual abuse. He is accused of raping 6 teenage girls and forcing sexual contact with a 7th. The alleged incidents with the girls, who range in age from 13 to 16, occurred in September, November, February, and March in Mapleton, Iowa. Nobaum repeatedly denied the accusations during an interview with investigators. No arrests made during second night of protest in Sioux City. And again, this is Dolly from Dolly Butts of the Sioux City Journal. Out of Sioux City, no one was arrested in connection with the second consecutive night of protesting in downtown Sioux City, according to Sioux City Police Sergeant Jeremy McClure. As many as 200 people gathered outside the Sioux City Police Department headquarters building late Monday night into early Tuesday morning to protest over the death of George Floyd, a black man who died last week while in the custody of Minneapolis police. There were no arrests at all in connection with the peaceful protest, McClure said Tuesday. Police arrested 13 people in downtown Sioux City early Monday morning after protesting turned violent, with some demonstrators hurling rocks at officers. 5 police officers received minor injuries when they were struck with rocks and assaulted by protesters during arrests. Numerous patrol cars were also damaged by members of the crowd. That incident and other protests that turned violent across the country prompted the Sioux City Council on Monday night to grant Mayor Bob Scott the authority to order a citywide mandatory curfew this week if necessary. Scott said a curfew wouldn't go into effect without a really recommendation from the police department. There are pictures of protesters laying on the ground, and one protester lays in the street with others during the second night of protests Monday evening in downtown Sioux City at the police headquarters building. Protesters at one point, numbering about 200, were demonstrating against last week's death of George Floyd, a black man who died while in the custody of Minneapolis police. So, lots of protests. And one story from the Journal staff, Jensen chosen as South Dakota Chief Justice. Out of Pierce, South Dakota, the South Dakota Supreme Court on Tuesday announced that Justice Stephen Jensen has been selected to serve as the court's next Chief Justice. Appointed to the court in 2017, Jensen of Dakota Dunes was chosen by other justices. Jensen will assume the office upon the retirement of Chief Justice David Gilbertson in January. We need no reminder today that we continue to face challenges ahead, but I am truly looking forward to serving the people of South Dakota as Chief Justice. Jensen said in a news release, "I am grateful to Chief Justice David Gilbertson, who leaves the court system in a strong position. I can only hope to carry on his legacy of innovation and dedication to a strong and independent judiciary that provides invaluable services to our citizens." A Wakanda, South Dakota native, Jensen received his undergraduate degree from Bethel University in St. Paul, Minnesota in 1995 and his law degree from the University of South Dakota in 1988. He worked in private practice until he was named a circuit court judge in 2003. He and his wife, Sue, have 3 children. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, June 3rd, 2020 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Esther M. McDaniels of Sioux City. Esther M. McDaniels, 81, of Sioux City, passed away Sunday, May 31st, 2020 at a local care service. Services will be 10 a.m. Thursday at St. Thomas Orthodox Church. Burial will be in St. Thomas Orthodox Cemetery, Graceland Park Cemetery. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday with a Trisagion service at 7 p.m. at the church. Arrangements are under the direction of Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Online condolences can be given at www.meyerbrotherschapels.com. Joanne Stenwick, Sioux City. Joanne Stenwick, 83, of Sioux City, died Friday, May 29, 2020, at a local nursing home. Private graveside services will be held. Arrangements are under the direction of Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux, Sergeant Bluff. Memorials may be directed to Modern Day Immaculate Conception Catholic Church or Noah's Hope. Florentine Amador Cruz of South Sioux City. Florentine Amador Cruz, 66, of South Sioux City, passed away Thursday, May 28, 2020, at a local hospital. Services will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday at St. Michael's Catholic Church in South Sioux City, with the Reverend Anthony Widener officiating. Burial will be in St. Michael's Cemetery. Visitation with the family will be 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home. Online condolences may be offered at www.meyerbrotherschapel.com. Marianne Bobolts of Hartley, Iowa, 86, died Tuesday, June 2nd, 2020. Private graveside services, Pleasant View Cemetery, Hartley. Warner Funeral Home, Spencer, Iowa. Floyd E. Clark of Dakota City. Floyd E. Clark, 81, of Dakota City, passed away Saturday, May 30th, 2020, at a local care center. Graveside services will be 2 p.m. Friday at Memorial Park Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Marr and Becker Hunt Funeral Home. Online condolences may be given at www.meyerbrotherschapels.com. Donald R. Ardema of Doane, Iowa. Donald R. Ardema, 88, of Doane, died Sunday, May 31st, 2020. At Rock Rapids Care Center in Rock Rapids, Iowa. Private services will be Thursday at Doane Protestant Reformed Church with the Reverend Joshua Inglesma officiating. Burial with military rites will be at Hillside Cemetery. The service can be live streamed at 10 a.m. Thursday by going to www.dooneprc.org/live@html. Visitation without the family will be 2 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at Port Funeral Home in Rock Valley, Iowa. Condolences may be left for the family at www.porterfuneralhomes.com. Memorials may be given to Northwest Iowa Protestant Reform School in Doane. Darlene F. Kuster of Sioux City. Darlene F. Kuster, 83, of Sioux City, passed away Sunday, May 31st, 2020, at Bickford of Sioux City. Services will be at 10:30 a.m. Thursday at Morningside Lutheran Church in Sioux City. Burial will be in Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be 6 to 8 p.m. today with a prayer service at 7 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel, 3220 Stone Park Boulevard in Sioux City. Lillian Lelchuk of Sioux City, 102, died Monday, June 1, 2020. Graveside service, June 3rd, 1:30 p.m. Independent Foreign Cemetery, Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Marvin G. Christensen, Cherokee, Iowa, 79, died Tuesday, May 12, 2020. Private graveside service, Oak Hill Cemetery, celebration of life at a later date. Visitation, June 5th, 1 to 7 p.m., Boothby Funeral Home, Cherokee. Myron D. Roselle, Mapleton, Iowa. Myron D. Rozelle, 71, of Mapleton, died unexpectedly Thursday, May 28, 2020, at his home. Services will be 10 a.m. Saturday at Meyer Brothers Cologne Chapel in Sioux City with the Reverend Johnny Helton officiating. Visitation with the family will be 5 to 7 p.m. Friday with the prayer service at 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Online condolences may be directed to www.meyerbrotherschapel.com. This was someone that I was close to. Myron Dean Rozelle was born on February 4, 1949 in Hayward, Iowa to Averill and Mildred Otkin Rozelle. Myron grew up in Hayward and later moved with his family to Lamars, Iowa. He was baptized and confirmed in the Lutheran faith. Myron graduated from Lamars Community High School in 1967 and went on to attend Westmore College, where he received a Bachelor of Science degree. Myron served in the Air National Guard from 69 75. In 1969, Myron married Sally Arnay. They were married for 27 years and had three children. Early in his career, Myron taught high school business and coached football and girls golf in Mobile, Iowa, before becoming director of the Lutheran Home in Perry, Iowa. Later, he worked at the Federal Land Bank in Fort Dodge, Iowa, and went on to take the position of president of First State Bank in Mapleton. Myron retired in 2011 after 26 years. In his retirement, Myron worked as a member relations consultant with the American Bankers Association. Myron volunteered his time over the years as a volleyball line judge and announcer for sporting events at MVAO, Maple Valley and Anthony Odo Schools. Myron was also a leader in the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and FFA. He served on the board of multiple charitable organizations, including Crossroads of Western Iowa, Maple Valley Economic Development Group, and as chair of the Legislative Committee for the Iowa Bankers Association. Myron enjoyed golfing, fishing, riding motorcycles, woodworking, and spending time with his grandchildren. He was a friend to all he met and found much joy in helping others. He truly loved his family and his Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Survivors include his three children, Kelly White and her husband Lee of Mooresville, North Carolina, Jason Rozelle and his wife Bethany of Nolensville, Tennessee, and Kim Wells and her husband Ricky of Decola, Georgia. Grandchildren Kaylee Rozelle, Justin Cuglin, and Andrew White, Ellie Wells, Grant Rozelle, Lexi Wells, Lauren Rozelle, and Sophie Wells. A brother, Randy Rozelle, and wife, Jean of Ironton, Iowa, and aunt, Irene Prell of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and many cousins and nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his parents, brothers Laverl Rozelle and Dallas Rozelle, and an aunt, Darlene Lane. Memorials can be made in Myron's name to the Riverside Lutheran Bible Camp in Story County, Iowa, or Fellowship of Christian Athletes. In lieu of flowers, his children request personal stories, memories, and letters be written and brought to the service or emailed to the memoriesofmyron@gmail.com. Alvin Fitzgerald Jones, Sr., South Sioux City, 53, died Saturday, May 3, 2020. Services June 6, 2:30 p.m. Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City, burial Calvary Cemetery, visitation June 5th. 4 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Kathy L. Brown, Onawa, Iowa. Kathy L. Brown, 72 of Onawa, passed away Sunday, May 31st, 2020 at her residence. A celebration of life service will be 7 p.m. Friday at Rush Family Care Services in Onawa, led by Jack Gibbler. Social distancing measures must be followed. Condolences may be left online for the family at www.rushfamilycareservices.com. Gerard Reinders, Orange City, Iowa. Gerard Jerry Reinders, 86, of Orange City, passed away Saturday, May 30, 2020 at Embassy Rehab and Care Center in Sergeant Bluff. Private family services will be 1 p.m. Thursday at American Reformed Church in Orange City. The Reverend Michael Hardman will officiate. Interment will be in West Lawn. Visitation without the family will be 4 to 7 p.m. today at Ullman Funeral Home in Orange City. In light of current events and in an effort to abide by the recommendation of social distancing, we encourage you to use our website, www.ullman, and that's OOLMAN.com, to leave a message of condolence, print a memorial folder, view the tribute video, and participate in the funeral services via live stream. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Alzheimer's Association or the CURE Initiative of Hospice. John C. Wasink of Sioux City. John Charles Wasink, 93, of Sioux City, died on June 2nd, 2020 in Virginia Beach, Virginia. There's no information. Carl F. Vanderpool of Orange City, Iowa. Carl Vanderpool, 93, of Orange City, passed away Sunday, May 31st, 2020 at Prairie Ridge Care Center in Orange City. Private family services will be Friday in Newkirk Cemetery, Rural Hospice Hours. The Reverend Mark Heverdink will officiate. Visitation without the family will be 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday at Ullman Funeral Home in Orange City. In light of current events and in an effort to abide by the recommendation of social distancing, we encourage you to use our website, www.olman.com, to leave a message of condolence or print a memorial folder. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to First Reformed Church in Orange City or Landsmere Ridge Retirement Community. Andrea L. Peterson of Sioux City. Andrea Louise Bungie Peterson, 74, of Sioux City, died Sunday, May 24, 2020, at her residence. Private family graveside services will be in Graceland Park Cemetery at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Morningside Chapel Christy Smith Funeral Homes. Jean Marie Brunger, Sioux City, 80, died Tuesday, June 2, 2020, My Brother's Colonial Chapel. Barbara Barb Utters, Sioux City, 76, died Saturday, May 30, 2020, Memorial Services, June 6, 2 p.m., My Brother's Colonial Chapel. Mary Ellen Van Kirk, Bancroft, Nebraska, 95, died Friday, May 29, 2020, Memorial Service at a later date, Munderloo Smith Funeral Homes of Bancroft. Kenneth Kenny Robinson, 57, died Friday, May 22, 2020, services June 6, 1 p.m., Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel, visitation June 6, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the funeral home. Dan W. Ping, Yankton, South Dakota, formerly of Sloan, Iowa. Dan Wright Ping, 85, of Yankton, died Monday, March 23, 2020 at Avera Sister James Care Center in Yankton. Private family memorial services with live streaming will be 10:30 a.m. Saturday at Opsahl Coastal Funeral Chapel in Yankton, with the Reverend Teresa Jacobson officiating. Live stream address is www.facebook.com/OPSHLKOSTEL live. Burial will be at approximately 2 p.m. Saturday, with continued live streaming in Sloan Cemetery, Sloan, Iowa, with military rites conducted by the American Legion Smith Rhodes Post 295 and U.S. Army National Guard Honor Guard. Drive-up window visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. Online condolences may be sent at www.opsahl-costel.com. Catherine Wickey, Sioux City, 82, died Monday, June 1st, 2020. Graveside services, June 4th, 2 p.m. Memorial Park Cemetery, Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. And that concludes our obituaries for today. If you are celebrating a birthday today, your horoscope says, emphasize how you earn your living. Find new ways to use your skills. Learn about and explore something that intrigues you. Make a change based on your current situation, where you see yourself hiding and what you want to accomplish moving forward. Don't get angry, get moving. And if you are celebrating a birthday today, happy birthday. And some that had birthdays or are still celebrating birthdays: Jefferson Davis, President of the Confederate States; Raoul Duffy, an artist; Tony Curtis, actor; Allen Ginsberg, poet; Chuck Barris, game show host; Raul Castro, President of Cuba; Larry McMurtry, author; Curtis Mayfield, singer-songwriter; Anderson Cooper, TV journalist; John Hogman, author and actor; Rafael Nadal, a tennis player; and Yardino Ventura, a baseball player. If you're celebrating a birthday, happy birthday. In lieu of time, we're going to skip Dear Abby today and read a couple more local stories for your edification. Sioux City, South Sioux City, Hy-Vee stores to give away many peaches. And this is in Sioux City. Sioux City and South Sioux City Hy-Vee stores will give away more than 40,400 mini peaches Wednesday during a drive-thru event. Hy-Vee on Hamilton, Southern Hills Mall, Hy-Vee, and Garden Plaza Hy-Vee, as well as South Sioux City Hy-Vee, will give away nearly 20 peaches, mini peaches, to the first 530 customers at each location from 1 to 3 p.m. or until supplies run out. Hy-Vee said in a statement released Tuesday that in total, approximately 7,600 pounds of fresh produce will be donated. In partnership with its fruit supplier, SunWest Fruit Company, Hy-Vee is donating fresh produce to customers as COVID-19 continues to impact individuals and families across Iowa and Nebraska. Fresh mini peaches will be distributed to customers for free on a first-come, first-served basis. Product will be loaded into customers' vehicles using a contactless method to minimize physical contact and enforce social distancing. All event helpers will be wearing masks and gloves for additional safety measures. No walk-ups will be allowed. We do have a mugshot story. Siouxland man sought by Fugitive Task Force. The U.S. Marshal Services of Northern Iowa Fugitive Task Force is seeking the public's assistance in locating the following person. Gatik Leith, 23, he is 6'4" tall and weighs 145 pounds. Leith is wanted by the Woodbury County Sheriff's Office for violating his probation. Leith is on probation for possession with intent to deliver drugs. Anyone with information can call the North Iowa Fugitive Task Force at 712-252-0211 or email siouxlands.mostwanted@usdoj.gov, and that is spelled GATKEKLIETH, and he's 23. A COVID update. COVID-19 related deaths in Iowa spike, hospitalizations decline. And this is out of Des Moines, out of the Des Moines Bureau with Aaron Murphy. One day after Iowa matched one of the lowest single day new coronavirus related deaths since the early days of the pandemic, here, the state on Tuesday matched the second highest single-day total with 21 virus-related deaths. The 21 new deaths recorded Tuesday were more than the previous 3 days combined, at least temporarily halted what had been a downward trend in new daily deaths and displayed volatility in the data. On Tuesday afternoon, the state also surpassed 20,000 total confirmed cases since the virus was first officially detected here in mid-March, according to state and public health data. And the state finally surpassed 5,000 tests processed in a single day, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said Tuesday during a press conference at the Iowa State Capitol. Reynolds said on Saturday that the state hygienic lab processed 5,223 tests, finally hitting the goal that was established when the state entered into a $26 million contract with a Utah-based private health care company to boost testing. Reynolds said the state surpassed 5,000 tests again on Monday. Reynolds also said 1 in 19 Iowans has now been tested at least once, and that state public health data shows the rate of positive cases decreasing. I'm proud of what we've accomplished, Reynolds said, but the pandemic is not over and there remains much work to do. The previous 3 days brought a total of 19 virus-related deaths in Iowa, including just 4 confirmed on Monday. That brought the 7-day average to its lowest point in nearly 2 weeks. But the average increased with Tuesday's 21 deaths, the Iowa's second highest single-day total behind the 26 confirmed on May 23rd. Virus-related hospitalizations, on the other hand, continued downward trends that are approaching a month long. The 327 hospitalizations recorded Tuesday are the fewest since late April, and the 7-day average of 360 is the lowest since early May and continues a downward trajectory that started with a peak on May 11th. The 12 new virus-related hospital admissions recorded Tuesday is the fewest since mid-April, and the 7-day average of 26.9 is the lowest since late April. Guard ready if needed. Reynolds said she has not yet activated the Iowa National Guard to assist local law enforcement departments at protests taking place across the state, but the Guard stands ready if called upon. 2 people were killed and a police officer and another person were injured in protest in Davenport over the weekend. And law enforcement has, on multiple occasions, used tear gas, pepper spray, and rubber bullets to disperse protests in Des Moines over the past week. The Guard is a resource I can call up if needed, Reynolds said Tuesday. At this point, we have not needed that, but they are ready at a moment's notice. Protesters are calling attention to George Floyd, a Minnesota black man who died after a white police officer kneeled on his neck for nearly 9 minutes. The coronavirus cases, the number of presumptive cases of coronavirus continues to rise in Siouxland states, and our graph shows South Dakota at 5,067, Nebraska at 14,611, and Iowa at 20,018. And again, these numbers are as of 7 p.m. Tuesday, from the state public health department. Also, we have a graph showing Siouxland COVID cases by county, and these are positive cases and in some cases what the deaths are. And for the total number, 6,823. Yankton has 51 cases, Clay 15 cases, Union County 91 cases. In Nebraska, Cedar County, 8 cases. Dixon County, 32 cases with one death. Wayne County, 19 cases. Thurston County, 106 cases with one death. In Dakota County, 1,683 cases with 26 deaths. And on the Iowa side, Lyon County has 24 cases, Osceola 34 cases, and Dixon County 25 cases. Sioux County 287 cases, O'Brien 33, Clay 18, Plymouth County 135 cases with two deaths, Cherokee 32 cases, Buena Vista 854 cases with one death, and Woodbury County 2,786 cases with 36 deaths, Ida County 14, Sac County 21, Monona County 25, and Crawford County 530 cases with two deaths. And again, this is data as of 7 p.m. Tuesday from the State Department of Health. Well, one last look at our weather. We have a high of 86 today and a low of 62. Thursday, a high of 88, low of 65. Friday, 84 and a low of 64. Saturday, a high of 86 and a low of 73. And on Sunday, windy and humid with clouds and sun with a high of 88 and a low of 70 degrees. Well, that brings us to the end of our reading for Wednesday, June 3rd, 2020 of the Sioux City Journal. I am your volunteer reader, Ike Rayford. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. At high doses, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like diclofenac, ibuprofen, or naproxen may increase the risk of kidney problems. The study that revealed this used de-identified medical records of more than 750,000 active duty U.S. Army soldiers. Consequently, these were active young and middle-aged adults. During the time of the study, from 2011 through 2014, nearly 18% of these soldiers got a prescription for 1 to 7 doses of an NSAID pain reliever in a month. Another 16% were prescribed more than 7 doses in a month. Fewer than 1% of these people were subsequently diagnosed with acute or chronic kidney disease. Nevertheless, the rate of kidney trouble was about 20% higher among people who had received high-dose NSAIDs than among those who had taken none. The authors described the increased risk as modest but statistically significant.
Another class of drugs that can lead to kidney injury is proton pump inhibitors. A data mining initiative of the FDA's Adverse Event Reporting System analyzed kidney-related side effects among 43,000 people who took a drug such as esomeprazole, lansoprazole, or omeprazole. Approximately 8,000 people taking a histamine 2 blocker such as ranitidine or famotidine served as controls, since they take these drugs for similar symptoms. The researchers found that 5.6% of people on PPIs alone had a kidney-related side effect, while only 0.7% of those on H2 blockers did. Chronic kidney disease was 28 times more likely, and acute kidney injury was 4 times more likely among people taking PPIs. While this analysis shows association, not causation, there are previous studies linking PPIs and kidney damage.
There's growing concern about a mysterious infectious disease that has been spreading among the wild deer population for decades. Scientists call it CWD, or chronic wasting disease. Hunters refer to this condition as zombie deer disease. It can also affect elk and moose. The CDC reports that this infectious disease has spread to wildlife in 24 states and 2 Canadian provinces. CWD was first detected in Colorado among captive deer in the 1960s and in the wild deer population in the 1980s. It's now affecting deer in the Midwest, Southwest, and some parts of the East Coast. The disease appears to be caused by a prion infection reminiscent of mad cow disease. An infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota has warned that hunters who eat contaminated deer meat may eventually develop the human equivalent of chronic wasting disease.
Shoulder replacement surgery is becoming increasingly common. Now researchers writing in the BMJ say that patients should be warned that the risks are higher than originally thought. The investigators reviewed hospital and mortality records in the UK. When men between 50 and 59 have this type of shoulder surgery, 1 in 4 will need further surgery on that shoulder within 5 years. In addition, older people who underwent this kind of surgical procedure experienced high rates of serious adverse events. 1 in 9 older women and 1 in 5 older men had an infection, major blood clot, heart attack or stroke, or died within 3 months. The authors of the study encouraged their colleagues to counsel patients about the risks as well as the benefits of this kind of surgery.
Drug interactions are a serious hazard in hospitals and the community. If patients receive prescriptions for incompatible medications, they can experience severe side effects that may even be life-threatening. Electronic medical records are intended to warn prescribers and pharmacists about potentially dangerous interactions, but many do so indiscriminately. The result is something called alert fatigue. If clinicians receive too many warnings, they may not pay attention to the really important ones. A team at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital reviewed their alert system. They removed unnecessary alerts and provided additional information to the most important ones. After they finished, they tracked clinicians' reactions. Alert overrides dropped by 40%. One important change linked alerts to the patient's laboratory data, making them much more targeted. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.